Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What happens when a city grows from a population of 350,000 to more than 13 million in a span of just 7 decades? Karachi's transformation from a modest colonial port city before the partition of India into the megalopolis it is today is important not only to the people of Pakistan, but to the United States, which considers Karachi's stability a matter of national security interest. Morning Edition host Steve Inskeep has done extensive reporting from Karachi and writes about the city's recent history, its conflicts and challenges, and the bright spots of vitality and even tolerance in his new book, Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. He'll be in town this Friday for an address jointly sponsored by the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, the Dallas Assembly, and KERA. Steve, welcome to Think.
Hey, it's great to be here. I just heard the weather forecast, though. Was it really 59 in Dallas?
Just in the morning and overnight.
Oh, okay, fine.
No, it's,
okay,
it's beautiful
fine.
Right now.
Okay, yeah, that's just amazing. I was wondering, is that a Celsius temperature? I mean, that's not the Dallas that I know. My brother lives in the area, so I get down. But anyway, it's great to be talking to you.
Well, you've reported in interesting places all over the world. I'm curious what it was about Karachi that made you think, okay, this is the time that I have to write a book.
The city grew on me, to be honest. I started traveling to Pakistan in 2002. That's the first time I was in Karachi, and I didn't really like it very much. Mm-hmm. It was this big, scary city. It was hard to get around. You thought you'd get run over just crossing the street. And I was covering court proceedings for the accused killers of Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter who was abducted and killed in Karachi. So it was not a good introduction to the city. But I returned in later years, and I began to think that there was a bigger story here. How was it that this city came to be? I would see British colonial buildings, these gorgeous stone structures, and next to them would be new buildings made of what looked like cinder blocks. How did this city grow so large on the shore of the Arabian Sea, and what did it tell me? And I began to realize that there is a much larger story here. This is a city, as you said, that was about 400,000 at the end of World War II, and it's now more than 13 million. Phenomenal growth, and that is normal. It is normal around the developing world. In fact, it has happened in quite a few places in the United States, including Dallas-Fort Worth, which is several times larger than it was at the end of World War II. Houston is 6 times larger than it was at the end of World War II. That's my definition of an instant city, a city that has grown rapidly, more rapidly than the population growth in the area in the last several decades. And what's happening is people are moving. People are migrating to cities by the billions around the world.
You spoke to one resident whose assessment of Pakistan was that we're not a poor country, we're a poorly managed country.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Reading this book, that seems doubly true, or perhaps 30-fold true, for Karachi.
Yeah, I mean, it's a chaotic place. It's a place where people grab an opportunity when they come. I mean, people come from a poor village to try to get a job in a textile mill making $3 or $4 or $5 a day, and that's a lot of money for them, a lot of money from their perspective, or they're trying to get an education, or they're trying to get a better life for their kids, or they're trying to make a fortune. But they have to do it all in a situation where public services are inadequate or have collapsed. There are hours of blackouts every day. When you are talking with people in the evening in Karachi, it's very normal that just the lights will go out, and suddenly you're sitting in the darkness. And the thing that really strikes you, Chris, is that your heartbeat jumps. I mean, it's so rare in the United States that the power goes out, and it's just you're struck by it. But the person you're talking with doesn't even interrupt their sentence. They just keep right on going because it happens every day. There are incredible shortages of resources, and the government doesn't function very well. The police are considered corrupt and ineffective, and so you're very much on your own.
So you really center the stories you tell here around a horrific attack on a Shia religious procession that took place in December of 2009 in the heart of Karachi. Can you talk about what happened there?
Yeah, on that day, this procession was going down Muhammad Ali Jinnah Road, which is named after the founder of Pakistan, and a bomb exploded. A number of people were killed. This happens a lot in Karachi. You have attacks, religiously motivated attacks, and this is important, on Muslims. There's certainly discrimination against other religions, and there's certainly a battle between various militants in the West, but this is often a battle between Muslims, and this minority sect was targeted. After that, a number of men appeared on the street, and for reasons that are still not entirely clear, burned hundreds of shops in a major wholesale commercial district of the city. A large swath of the city was burned down, and that led to tremendous political controversy and questions about the real estate. Believe it or not, of all the things you could argue about, the underlying property became the subject of political debate, which is classic. You have all of these different groups coming together and contending with each other for space in this city, and often that conflict gets down to questions of money, power, and land.
And when you had this inferno following the bombings, the police in Karachi said, well, clearly this was these were set in retaliation by the victims that had were still sort of staggering away from the conflict.
It could be. It could be in some cases that the fires were set that way, and some of the fires were set right there by the bomb explosion where the people from the procession were. But some of the fires were set something like two-thirds of a mile away, and that has raised questions in a lot of people's minds about who really was setting the fires and why. Now, it's impossible to get to the bottom of this, but the fact that there were so many conspiracy theories that grew out of it, I think, is characteristic of this place where you just can't rely on anything. You don't get reliable information from the government or any other source, and so people make up their own stories.
So, Steve, you talked about land conflicts. How is land occupied and managed and purchased, and how does that happen in Karachi?
Oh, gosh, it's gone almost entirely off the books. What happens is that basically people who you'd might think of them as crime bosses, but they would think of themselves, I think, as developers or land suppliers is a term that is used. They'll grab a piece of government land. It might even be park land or land that's designated for a school. They'll chop it up into little properties and sell it to poor people. And poor people are very excited about this. They get homes. They get cheap homes. But, of course, they don't formally have title to them since the land underneath the homes was stolen in the first place. And so you have this entirely illegal set of transactions. The police are bribed to not notice as it's happening. And when you look at Google images, satellite images of this city, as experts have done and have shown me how to do, you see over a period of just a few years many square miles, even hundreds of square miles, being occupied. There's a huge suburban expansion, huge suburban sprawl going on in this megacity, the same way there's a huge amount of sprawl going on in Dallas-Fort Worth, except that it's mostly illegal in Karachi and in a lot of other cities in the developing world. This is pretty normal in the developing world.
Yeah, so people might occupy this land for a number of years, assuming that they have at least some right to be there, and then find themselves completely displaced overnight.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the risks. Now, what has more likely happened is that people occupy this land and then they begin agitating for services. Of course, they're not supposed to get any. They're not legally supposed to be there at all, but they do have a degree of political power, and someone will become their leader and will try to harness that power, and they will agitate to have the land be regularized, meaning they just get given title to it, and then they can try to get electricity and try to get sewers. But that's a process that takes decades, and there are many cases in Karachi where people have ended up having to dig their own sewers. I mean, it is a situation where you really are, in many cases, on your own.
So if you can't trust the poorly managed or corrupt government, you simply take matters into your own hands, if possible.
If you can. Mm-hmm. If you can get away with it.
One of the bright spots in Karachi is this ambulance service that was established by a self-made entrepreneur who sort of worked his way up from street peddler. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Abdul Sattar Eidi is described as almost a saint in Karachi. He came to this city in 1947. At the beginning of this dramatic growth that I'm describing, the beginning of this process, and so he's seen it all. And he's a guy who appears all the way through the book, he and his ambulance service and his son and his wife and other characters appear again and again because they've seen so much. In 1947, when British India was divided into two separate countries, India and Pakistan, India was expected to be majority Hindu, Pakistan was expected to be majority Muslim, but neither was unanimous. And what happened, somewhat unexpectedly, was that millions of people fled. They found themselves on the wrong side of the dividing lines, quote unquote, and they fled. Many were killed. Many Hindus fled Karachi, which actually had been a majority Hindu city. Hundreds of thousands of Muslims came, and this guy, Eidi, was one of them. And yes, he was working as a street peddler, but his father had a little bit more money and gave him a stake a little bit later on. He ended up opening a pharmacy. He ended up becoming more and more, I guess you would say, eccentric, but he was very interested in helping the poor. And he would help to do things that others would find distasteful, like washing the dead before burial. And in the end, he made enough money to, through his various enterprises and charitable enterprises, to invest in buying an ambulance. And that one ambulance over the decades has expanded to the point where there are 80 ambulances visible in almost every corner of Pakistan. And they're cheap, and they're very simple. You would not be impressed if you looked in the... It's a van. I mean, it's a van with a cot. It's a van with a gurney in the back. And it's one guy driving, and it's a little minivan, and you'd be afraid you're going to get killed on the streets because of the traffic, but it shows up. And when there is violence in the city, as there often is, the ED ambulances are among those who show up to help.
And to this day, founder ED still will go on an ambulance run now and then.
Oh, yeah, now and then, indeed. In fact, he's survived a bombing or two in recent years.
My guest is journalist Steve Inskeep. You know him as host of NPR's Morning Edition. His new book is called Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. Steve will be in town this Friday to address an event jointly sponsored by the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, the Dallas Assembly, and KERA. You can find more information about that at dfwworld.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Hey, Rollins Gilliland here. I'm really excited right now because you know what? This is a time of day that I bet you're like me, that you absolutely make appointment radio. KERA Chris, and I'm with right now one of the powers behind that show, the senior executive producer, Jeff Whittington.
Hey, Rollins. Thanks for being here today.
Well, I'm really excited about it. I'll tell you, first of all, it's a great show as always. I was laughing on the way over here because I was thinking about, you know, last week when you had a show about boredom, and I thought, well, this guy that's the guest has certainly not been listening to Chris every day because there's no such thing as a boring day on Chris's show. I mean, I've laughed, I've cried, I could go on and on. But anyway, you're the senior producer, and I really wanted to spend some time with you and with the people out here that are really listening in and trying to support us so we can bring... Folks out there, you know that. We got to have the money. We need the money. The breaks are going to be, all about supporting the station. But I also want us to have some fun. And I'm telling you, I am a huge fan of this man, Jeff Whittington. He wears many hats. And Jeff, would you just, I mean, when we get back, I want you to tell me a little bit more about how you actually, as the senior producer, how you sort of vet this and set it up. Because you make it look easy. I've been a guest on the show, so. But it isn't easy, I know that. So can you call right now? Everybody out there, let's do the thing right now. Let's call 888-694-6931. Show our support for Chris Boyd, because you know right now, Chris Boyd is by far one of the most valuable assets that this station has and one of the great reasons to live in North Texas.
Yeah, the number to call, 888-694-6931. It's toll-free. It just takes a couple of minutes. Just dial 1-888-694-6931. Support the Think program, the show that we bring you every single day with interesting guests that you get to talk to as well. You can click and join online as well, safely, securely, and easily at kera.org.
Absolutely. You know, I have a song. KERA's Chris, North Texas's bliss, the audience responding, the pledge drive absconding. What's that number again?
888-694-6931.
Or you can go online to kera.org. Show some support. Let's just cut the you-know-what. Let's call that number. Let's get online. Let's bring this drive to a close. But you know what? Today, let's also do it as a real show of support and love and appreciation for someone who really makes this, the whole North Texas area, a better place to live. Chris Boyd and Think.
The number to call, 888-694-6931. Glad you're with us today, Rollins.
Oh, I'm proud to be here.
Support the show. Support the station. Do it online right now very safely, securely, and conveniently. Go to kera.org, and thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Steve Inskeep. He is host of NPR's Morning Edition and author of the new book Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. He'll be in town this Friday to address an event sponsored jointly by the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, the Dallas Assembly, and KERA. You can learn about that at dfwworld.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. That is where we hear from Steve in Dallas, who writes, how does your family manage the stress of you working in dangerous war zones? And I'll tell you, Steve Inskeep, I like this question because we ask it a lot of working moms, but not so often of working dads.
Well, I appreciate the question, and I'm really proud of my family and grateful to my family for putting up with it. The dedication of this book, actually, is to my wife, Carol Lee, for putting up with the author and his absences. You know, it's difficult for them, I imagine, but I just try to reassure them that it's going to be okay. I'm usually thinking about where I'm going. I'm always thinking about where I'm going. And they're really wonderful people. You get a little scared thinking of going to a place like Pakistan, but you actually do run into people who really look after you, who are extremely hospitable. And in fact, my mom, in Indiana, when she finished reading this book, one of the things that she said was, I wish I had been able to read this book before you went over to report it, because I would have worried less. It's a place where you have to watch your step, but it's also a place where you'll meet fantastic folks.
Yeah, it's so easy sometimes to forget when we hear the headline versions of these stories and we hear about violence and conflict that there are regular people making their lives despite the circumstances and finding ways to find moments of joy.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel that that's what part of this book is, even though a lot of sad things will happen. This is the backstory, if you will, to a lot of news stories that come out of Pakistan that seem to make no sense. And I would hope that after reading this book, it'll make a little more sense. And also the backstory to a lot of news stories around the world, around the developing world. What is happening and the way that people are grasping to improve their lives.
So let's go on to the ultimate sort of backstory topic that does, in fact, explain a lot about Karachi's troubles, and that's infrastructure. It's something that everybody familiar with the city recognizes as a challenge, but it's not been easy to make significant changes, in part because the government has switched itself every few years, or in some cases every few months.
Yeah, that happens a lot. The government doesn't have a lot of capacity. A lot of plans are announced and never enacted. You notice when you listen to Pakistani officials, with all respect to them, that they make a lot of statements in the future tense. We will do this. You know, the criminal will be severely dealt with, but of course they haven't caught the criminal yet. We will deal with this power crisis, but of course they haven't, and there are blackouts for hours at a time every single day in Karachi and in cities and even villages all across Pakistan. And so you do have massive infrastructure problems, which are multiplied in a growing city because, of course, whatever you build can quickly be outgrown. And that has been the constant struggle. There have been some of the world's great urban planners have come to Karachi and laid down markers and made plans and drawn up designs, and then they are overwhelmed by the sheer scale of the problem and overwhelmed by human nature. People go their own way and don't follow the plan.
Yeah, in the 1950s, you had the laudable Greek architect and civil engineer Konstantinos Doxiadis, who had really wonderful ideas for improving the city, but ultimately for integrating social classes in a fundamental way.
Oh, yeah. And this is a guy, I mean, we're thinking about this city on the other side of the world, but this guy Doxiadis is a guy that you may have dealt with, even though you've never heard his name, because he did redevelopments in cities in the United States. Urban redevelopment of the waterfront in Washington, D.C., a big urban neighborhood in Philadelphia. He had plans for the urban industrial Midwest. This was a grand guy who dealt on a grand scale in cities around the world. And he did lay out these plans for huge Karachi suburbs that would house hundreds of thousands of people. And they do house hundreds of thousands or millions of people today, but the plans were just overrun because you have this illegal housing market, or this unauthorized, let us say, housing market, where people go and grab bits of land and build homes where they can in ways that make sense for them. And when the planning did not perfectly match their lives, of course, human nature takes over, or just desperation takes over. You need to do what you got to do, and so people did it.
How is life on the street day-to-day in Karachi different from a city like Islamabad?
Oh, gosh. Now, that's an interesting comparison. Islamabad is a new city. It's only a few decades old. It was planned by that same guy, Doxiadis. And when you go around Islamabad, you feel like you're in an American urban redevelopment project from the 1960s. Mm-hmm. In fact, his firm brought in the same architect to design the presidential palace in Islamabad, Pakistan, as designed the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. And they sort of look the same. Mm-hmm. So it's a very strange experience. But that's a city that is well-designed and seems mostly to work, even though it has expanded massively and is outgrowing itself. Karachi is very different. But I will say also that even though Karachi is more chaotic, I think it's a more enjoyable city to be in than Islamabad. It's got this vibrancy to it. It's got this energy to it. It's changing all the time. And you can see spectacular contrasts. You go down to the beach, and there's someone riding a camel on the beach. And nearby is a new glass office tower that's vaguely shaped like a sailboat. And not far from that is a Hindu temple. And not far from that is a Muslim shrine. And near that is an illegal neighborhood where poor people are living and making $3 or $4 a day. The contrasts are incredible, but it's also very stimulating.
Quite frankly, going into this book, I wouldn't have expected to see the word tolerance appear as often as it does. But in fact, although there are conflicts between different Muslim sects and occasionally between members of different faiths, there is a spirit of trying to get along.
Yeah, you just touched on two really important things that I think are easy to miss from this distance. And the first is that there is a strain of tolerance in this place that seems incredibly intolerant from a distance. The founder of Pakistan, a guy from Karachi, Muhammad Ali Jinnah, in 1947, just before Pakistan became an independent nation, gave a famous speech in Karachi in which he urged his fellow citizens to live as equal citizens, overlooking color, caste, or creed. That is one of the founding speeches, really one of the founding documents of Pakistan. It's a speech that is well remembered even today. But at the same time, it's been disregarded in various ways throughout Pakistan's history and throughout Karachi's history. And there's two sides to that story. And one is tragic. The other is more inspiring, but it often hasn't come to pass.
Do residents of Karachi and Pakistan as a whole allow themselves to speculate on how different the country might look today had Jinnah had more than a couple of years in time on this earth after the country was born?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yes. There's still conversations that come back to Jinnah. His face is everywhere. His face is on all the currency. I mean, every denomination of currency has Jinnah's face. Any public building you walk into, there will be a portrait of Jinnah on the wall of every office and perhaps in the hallway as well. His face appears on television. It's more pervasive, really, even than George Washington, whose face is on the dollar bill and many other things in the United States. And there are many discussions about Jinnah. There are people who approve of him, people who disapprove of him, people who revere him. There's almost a cult of the guy that's built up over time. And yeah, some people do wonder, would he have set the country on a better course had he not been dying even as it was founded? Or would he have made a hash of it?
There was some resistance, even as people were racing across the borders when the country was newly partitioned. There was resistance to elite Hindus trying to leave. Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting bit of history that you mentioned there. This was a majority Hindu city when this majority Muslim country was founded around it. Because India, when it was divided into India and Pakistan, one's majority Hindu, the other's majority Muslim, but neither was unanimous. It was a majority Hindu city. And people immediately had deeply mixed feelings about these Hindus and what to do, because they were the commercial elites. They were the elites of the city. They were the people who had the money and the know-how and ran the factories and ran the upscale stores and restaurants. And people weren't sure they wanted them to stay, but they weren't sure that they wanted the Hindus to leave with their money either. And so they found themselves, the Hindus found themselves resented either way. In the end, the vast majority of them did flee or were driven out within about 6 to 8 months of the independence of Pakistan in 1947.
What sort of Christian population lives in Karachi now?
there's still a Christian population there. It is certainly not large anywhere in Pakistan. Pakistan is at least 95% Muslim. But there are Christians, and Karachi is perhaps more diverse than most. I wrote about this in the Wall Street Journal, actually, last week, and was getting into this question of religious tolerance. And one of the things that you realize is that Karachi is a spectacularly diverse place even today. There still are Hindus. There are Zoroastrians, followers of this ancient Persian faith that's even older than Islam. And there are Christians, and there are Christian institutions which date back to British colonial times. There is an elite Catholic school that has educated any number of people, including any number of Muslim leaders, including the current president of Pakistan, Asif Ali Zardari, the last military coup leader, Pervez Musharraf, various prime ministers and other people through history have gone through this Catholic school. And to me, that is one of the symbols of the hidden diversity of this place. It seems so monolithic from a distance, but really there are all kinds of people there, which is part of the city's great sorrow, because people conflict with each other. But more than that, I think it's the city's great strength, or at least potential strength.
Steve, for the poorest residents of these squatters' communities in and around Karachi, can they hope for their children to get a decent public education and move on to something better?
You said public education. Let me qualify that a little bit. I think a lot of people can hope and do hope. That's why they come. And they come for an education, or they come to get their kids an education. But the government schools are a little problematic, because they're not always open. There's not enough of them to begin with for the millions of kids in this rapidly expanding city, rapidly expanding country. And the ones that exist are not often open. I write in foreignpolicy.com this week about Karachi schools and look at one particular area where there's been fighting. There was fighting all summer long. And you have teachers from one ethnic group, students from another ethnic group, and it becomes difficult to get them in the same place because the two ethnic groups are at war with one another. That makes education a little complicated.
My guest is journalist Steve Inskeep, host of NPR's Morning Edition and author of the new book Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. He'll be in town this Friday to address the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, the Dallas Assembly, and KERA. You can find information about the event at dfwworld.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Rollins back here on the marathon with Chris Boyd's Think, and the senior producer here as my guest right now is, of course, the wonderful and amazing, also the host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, our Jeff Whittington. Jeff.
Hey, Rollins. Thanks for being here. Well, you know, we've heard from many of you during this drive. We're still waiting to hear from you. The number to call, 888-694-6931. You can join online as well at kera.org. You might want to pick up a copy of our guest's book. It's available. We've got copies of the book available at the $120 membership level. You can check it out online. That's just $10 a month if you decide to become a sustaining member of the station. And you'll know that your membership is always current. It's always up to date. It makes a huge difference. Call right now.
I spend that much on doggy treats every month. You know, those dogs can just get you. Listen, I asked you earlier, or at least I referenced about you as the senior producer for the show, about how you vet the guests. And I think people out there, you know, I know when I'm listening in, and God, I love this show, you know, so much, and I appreciate it. But I know you make it look easy. I've been a guest on Think, I'm proud to say, and I felt like you just made it look so easy. So could you just tell us out here a little bit about how you vet the guests and how you set it up?
Sure. Well, you know, we have a great audience, as you know.
I'll drink to that.
You talk to many people in the audience, Rollins, and we hear from you out there in the audience about the shows that really have an impact with you, the guests, the topics. Well, it's a topic-driven show, so, you know, we just kind of, Chris and I put our heads together. We keep track of what's going on in the world, who's making the news out there, and, you know, things that are happening, trends, pop culture, history. I mean, you name it.
My God, I feel overwhelmed hearing that list.
Across the board. I mean, you know, the show kind of covers the waterfront.
It does cover the waterfront.
And it's great because people participate. It's great because people call in. They write in. They participate in the show every single day. It's a call-in show. It's your forum. And you know what? You participate when you support the station.
Well, and that's why I was just going to say right now is a perfect time to mention just for you that we are trying to raise the money so that we can put this particular fall drive to bed and support Chris and support Think and show our respect here for the guest, you know, our wonderful Jeff Whittington. So call 888-694-6931. That's 888-694-6931. Or go online to KRA.org.
And don't forget, you can get a copy of our guest book today.
Absolutely. For what, $120?
The $120 membership level.
Well, that's easy. Let's just do that. I mean, what is that, $10 a month?
It's $10 a month.
I don't know. I'm just fascinated by what you do because, again, I mean, how many books – I'm fascinated by what she does. You know, I've always felt like we really in North Texas need to put Chris Boyd on a flatbed and roll her through the streets where everybody can throw rose petals at her because I can't imagine –
She'd like that. I think yeah, she'd really like that.
Well, that's where a lot of sunblock because, believe me.
For sure.
You know, but, I mean, how many books does she read? I mean, and how do you
all
decide
of them. She reads
which
every book.
One? People pitch you with the ideas of the book?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need guests on the show, and there are a lot of really smart folks out there in the world who are, you know, not just writing books, not just producing incredible documentaries or not non-documentary films, not just teaching really interesting courses at major universities all over the world. I mean, there are a lot of folks
They're
in the world, Ron, and our audience is so diverse and so smart here in North Texas. That's really who we're serving. Every decision we make about what's going to be on the show is really starts with the question, is our audience going to get something out of this? Is the Think and the KERA and the North Texas Public Radio audience going to get something that's stimulating out of us having this guest on the show?
I just listen. All right, that number, 888-694-6931 or online to KERA.org. I'm just fascinated, though, with the way I've watched her grow. I mean, you know, she was always an amazing talent anyway, but I've watched her grow as any professional that gets better and better and better. And it's so seamless, again, watching the way the flow of the conversation with her. I just don't know how she does it. Honestly, can tell you. There's two things I could not do, and that's wash windows on a 70-story building or do what you or Chris do. So that's why I'm asking everybody to call
888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org. Rollins, I'm really glad you're here today. This is a lot of fun, and we're hoping that you will support the station, and you can get a copy of the guest book when you join at the $120 membership
Absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely. And slay this fall pledge drive dragon early by calling 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's certificate program in financial planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Morning Edition host Steve Inskeep. He's just written a new book called Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. He will be in town this Friday to address a joint program with the World Affairs Council of Dallas-Fort Worth, the Dallas Assembly, and KERA. You can find information at dfwworld.org. If you want to join our conversation, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Steve, in any place where there are a few people who have been there for generations and a whole lot of new people, there is tension. Can you talk about the relationship between those two groups in Karachi?
Oh, sure. It's been a huge source of tension in Karachi for decades, ever since that period after World War II when the city really started growing. And that's not unique to Karachi. I think we could go to Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me that would be such a center of debate about immigration because you have migrants from the south as well as migrants from inside the U.S., from the north, coming to make this city that's 16 times larger than it was. It's new to everybody. The rules and the landscape are new to everybody. And so it's not surprising that Karachi would have the same kind of struggle between the people who feel that it was their city, that they have been there since time immemorial, and the newcomers who've come. And then, of course, they're the newcomers eventually, and I'm sure this has happened in Dallas, the newcomers become the old-timers. And then a new wave of people come and start changing things, and then more people are frustrated.
How much power and autonomy do women have there?
It really varies from person to person, neighborhood to neighborhood, family to family. But there are women who can rise to positions of power. Benazir Bhutto, who was the two-time prime minister before her assassination, is the most famous, but not the only one. And in fact, a number of rather influential women are profiled in this book. Dr. Seemin Jamali is one who comes to mind. She runs the emergency department of a really large public hospital in Karachi, which means she is the person who is waiting to receive the casualties from these ethnic battles and bombings and other conflicts that take place. And she's one of many characters in the book that are that come across as heroic, and I think fairly so. She actually survived a bombing of her hospital. The hospital emergency department itself was bombed. A second bomb was set to go off and did not explode. Many people were killed. The windows were blown out. The place was devastated, and yet within 24 hours, they got that emergency department running again.
So among the staff of the hospitals, does political conflict end at the door?
I think it does. But, you know, think about your own workplace. there are all kinds of conflicts.
Would that that were so, yes.
Yeah, would that that were so. I mean, they become, actually your workplace becomes a little microcosm for a city like this, doesn't it? Different people come from different places and have their own prejudices and divide into their own little tribes and so forth. I mean, Dilbert is the world writ small, isn't it? To an extent, though, it does. I mean, this is a place with 240 people. A lot of them have a reasonable amount of education. A lot of them are similar in that way, but they have different backgrounds. And a lot of people that I met didn't like to tell me their precise background or ethnicity. They just wanted to be Karachiites or Pakistanis. They didn't want to be identified with one ethnic group or another.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones now to Michael in Arlington. Hi, Michael.
Yes. I admire, both of you, Steve and Chris, and NPR.
Thank you.
But way back in the 1950s, I was a undergrad at a university in the U.S. with Saeed Qureshi, and his father was the vice president international for Kiwanis in Karachi. I know that they survived that 57 period. They were, I believe, Muslim. But do you have in your study, in your journalism, any information about that prominent family? Are they there in government or a power elite family, the Qureshis?
Well, there are Qureshis who are prominent. There's a Qureshi who was foreign minister until earlier this year. I just don't know if that's a relative of the people you're describing. Did you say the Kiwanis Club in Karachi?
Yes, that was Saeed Qureshi's father was, I met him one time, he came to the U.S., and he was at that time international vice president of the Kiwanis organization in Karachi.
I love hearing that that's there. You discover things that you wouldn't expect on the other side of the world. For example, there are also Boy Scouts in Karachi to this day, thousands of them. Some of them factor in this book. You would not expect to have the Boy Scouts of Pakistan, but it turns out that the president of the country is the country's chief scout, along with his other duties. So Asif Ali Zardari, whatever you think of the man, is the chief scout of Pakistan.
And this is a really important organization, particularly for working class and poor boys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you realize the way that these organizations evolve to their environments. I know there are all kinds of people who become scouts in America, but it's thought of as kind of this middle class organization. It's more about keeping poor kids out of trouble in a place like Karachi.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also reach us via email to think@kera.org. Talk, if you would, about the relationship between business owners and government, and particularly the military, with regard to certain industries in Karachi.
Oh, that is another thing to understand. When we talk about how powerful the military is in Pakistan, and that's something that's related on news story after another all year long, hasn't it? One thing to remember is that they have economic as well as political power and, of course, firepower. They own tons of land. They are huge landowners. They're probably the largest landowner in Karachi. They own all kinds of waterfront real estate. They are developers, and that gives them another layer of power. In Karachi, the people who have the guns also have the money, and that's made it really hard for democracy to flourish.
Well, it's really interesting because they're not simply even involved in munitions manufacturing. They have, like, sugar processing plants and, as you mentioned, real estate, things that we don't necessarily associate with,
yeah,
with the
military. Yeah, they've expanded beyond that. And, you know, they've got capabilities they want to exploit. You know, they've got the ability to build things. They've got engineers, so they start construction firms. And then they bid for projects which happen to be bid out by a military housing authority that owns a bunch of land. And what do you know? The military firm gets the contract from the military. And the private industry, free enterprise, can get squeezed out in that equation. It's an important thing to understand about the economy of that country and, frankly, a lot of other countries. Egypt, which has been hugely in the news this year, very similar. Turkey has some similarities. Iran is hugely similar. When you think about troubled places, you often think about an army that has gotten way beyond its boundaries.
What's the relationship between the sort of official position of the Pakistani government toward the United States and Americans and the views of people on the street?
They are related. There's a lot of anger at the United States, at U.S. policies. There's a lot of anti-Americanism, and the politicians play to that. And that's one of the reasons there's so much harsh rhetoric against the United States. There's also a lot of genuine frustration at the United States. There's embarrassment over things like the Osama bin Laden raid, where the Pakistanis weren't even told, and the U.S. was explicit about saying that's because we couldn't really trust them. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of resentment toward the United States, but I feel like there's also even now a reservoir of goodwill, of openness. I certainly was well treated in my travels in Pakistan, and I'm also told that on a kind of mid-level basis, beyond the top people, like the U.S. military is still able to work with the Pakistani military along that border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Things still function on some level. Things still work. But this is certainly a gravely difficult time in the relationship.
How does your ability to move about freely, collect the information you need, talk to the people you need to talk to when you're in Karachi and Pakistan as a whole compare with other countries where you've worked?
Oh, it's not the hardest place ever to work. It's not the scariest place ever to work. You know that the government is monitoring your movements mm-hmm. to some extent and maybe to a large extent, but it's not quite as obvious as in Iran, where I've also traveled. You know that there is a risk, but it's certainly nothing like Iraq a few years ago or nothing like Afghanistan some years ago or Afghanistan today. I mean, it could be worse.
And how free is the media in Karachi?
That is something also that's important to know. The last military ruler, whatever you think of him, Pervez Musharraf, freed up the media. He was kind of a liberal in an iron fist, liberal in the classical sense of trying to open up and free up things. And he went from having one government-run TV channel, basically, to allowing hundreds of free enterprise channels, hundreds of privately run channels, including quite a number of news channels. There are news channels in Urdu, in English, in other languages that are spoken in different parts of Pakistan. There is a raucous public debate in the media now. It's not always a well-informed debate. It's not always a responsible debate. And in fact, you can't say everything because certain things can get you killed. But a lot of things are said, and it is certainly allowed for the most part this year to criticize the government.
So by pretty much any projection, Karachi is going to keep growing. The figure you have here from the UN is 16.7 million by 2020. What does that mean for the future? I mean, can that growth be sustained, and will it just continue to look like a larger version of what it is today?
Well, you know, we don't really know because people make and remake and remake these cities. I don't think anybody could have imagined the Karachi that exists today. I think that the answer to that is largely going to be up to the people themselves. There are tremendous human resources there, by which I mean lots of people, lots of ambition, lots of desire, a fair amount of education among the elites. And the question is, how many people can rise along with them, can come along with them, can grab those opportunities and build a better place and transcend some of the tragedies and the difficulties that have marked this place ever since its tremendous growth began after World War II.
Steve Inskeep is host of NPR's Morning Edition and author of the new book Instant City, Life and Death in Karachi. Steve, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think production team includes engineer Nilufer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.
Rawlins Gilliland back here with my guest. Unlikely to say that. I mean, I feel like Charlie Rose being here at this desk. The Jeff Whittington, your host on Fridays of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know and the senior producer for the Think Show. You know, I'd love to say the power behind the throne with Chris Boyd, but you know what? I think she's the czarina of North Texas.
Well, you know, Rawlins, I mean, Chris does a great job. The show is always really interesting, and Chris is on every single hour.
Every day.
She's on. She is. She's great. It's a real pleasure and a real luxury to work with Chris because, you know, we always know we're going to get something great
when I decided to do this, and, you know, the Rawlins Marathons, I mean, I thought one of the great thrills is that I really get to honestly say what I think. And so many of you who are listening in right now, you know that I'm exactly one of you. I'm only really internal here at the station when I'm actually here recording a commentary or doing something like this. But in the other words, I'm out there at my desk listening to Chris every day or Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And she, like most people who are really remarkable and lovely and giving and talented pros, she's very humble. So, I mean, I knew that if she was my guest and I was saying, you know, she can't say I'm so wonderful, but I can and you can and we all can. So that's why I'm asking you to call 1-888-694-6931 and say to the person on the phone, first of all, say I want to give a lot of money. When you call 888-694-6931. But also say, you know, I'm doing this because I really appreciate Chris Boyd and Think.
It is the Think Show. You hear it every single Monday through Thursday from noon to 2 here on the station. Also from 9 to 11 in the evening. You know, heard from a lot of you that you're enjoying the evening broadcast of the show. Well, decide what it's worth to you. Decide, you know, think about how much you listen to KERA. How often do you tune in to Think? And put a value on that.
Call, just put your money where her mouth is. I'm telling you.
Call
888-694-6931
or do it. Click and join online at KERA.org. And don't forget, Rawlins, folks can pick up a copy of our guest book this hour at the $120 membership level.
$10 a month.
It's $10 a month if you become a sustaining member. Maybe you can do $20 a month and you can get two copies of the book and send one to a friend. We know you enjoy the topics and the guests we have here on the show because we hear from you single day. I'm the one that answers your emails when you write in, and I know that you appreciate.
And you're the one that lines up the guests. I swear. I mean, y'all are such a team, honestly. Again, 1-888-694-6931. You know, I'm talking to you out there. You're in your car. One of the things I learned when I first started doing any kind of radio is that everybody's doing something else when they're listening to us. You know, they're washing a dish, or they're at their desk, or they're driving a car, or they're changing a diaper, or they're doing something. And you know, now with the new app capability, I mean, they could be, you know, committing any number of different things at the same time that they're listening. But one of the things that I have to confess to you out there is I sometimes listen to Think twice a day. I mean, I did last night. I listened to that show again, and I thought, well, why when I'm cleaning the kitchen am I listening to this again? And I'd heard it before.
And it's not just because your radio's broken and stuck on 90.1.
Well, it kind of is, actually. You know, I don't know what the deal is. I mean, I feel like it's like Night of the Living Dead. The first thing I do every morning is I flip on that radio, and then it just stays on all day. And that's why I call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
Yeah, if you're listening online right now, it's really easy. You're already there. Just click over to the support page, you know, fill out the membership form, become the next new or renewing member of the station. If you're listening to the podcast, maybe you time delay, maybe your life doesn't allow you to listen to the show live, either online or on the air. Well, if you're listening to the podcast, you know what? You can still make a contribution and help offset the cost that KERA incurs providing that podcast.
Right, because that's not free, but it's free to our listeners.
It all seems free because you can turn on the radio and you can listen. But you know what? It's not free. Everything that KERA does for you has a cost.
Well, that's what you said on your show last Friday. I mean, you know, I just thought you said, you know, that everything looks like it's free and it's not.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. It's the way you make it look easy as a senior producer about the way you line people up and the way she makes it look easy when she's interviewing a guest. Listen, I'm talking to you out there because I'm one of you. I don't mean to be corny about it, but I am. I'm a listener to the station. I do not work for KERA. I work with KERA from time to time. And I'm asking you to please call 1-888-694-6931 and support this show. I know you love a lot of shows, but Chris Boyd's in a class by herself, and this show is truly what sets us apart from a lot of the other NPR markets, major around this country.
Well, Rollins is a really dedicated listener and participant because you're doing this all day long today, and we really appreciate the investment you're making of your time today here at the station, Rollins. And,
I'm thrilled.
You know, and I know people love to hear you on the air. I worry
only
that
if
they're
drunk.
Waiting. I just worry that they're waiting to make that contribution to later in the day. They should do it right now.
Well, they should do it right now. I mean, the way I look at it, if you're dating and you don't give somebody the ring, they could end up with your roommate. You know, I mean, so why not call 1-888-694-6931 now instead of waiting?
Do it online as well. Click and join at KERA.org. And thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much
for your support.